Welcome to the Vassals of Kingsgrave Pretend Politics Edition. This time we will be discussing the fourth season of Netflix's House of Cards. My name is Zach, also known as Alias in the Forums, and joining me for this review we have...
Bina 007 on the Forums.
Adam, also known as Drown Snow on the Forums.
Steven, or SJ Lee on the Forums.
Jeff, or Jeff14 on the Forums.
So there you go, and yes, we will be discussing House of Cards this time around, the fourth season that has just come out. For us, a week ago, I want to say, and obviously we all have already watched it. Some of us probably watched it before last week when it was over, which was true in my case. So, of course, that is the culture with these Netflix shows. You binge them as fast as humanly possible. But the question this time is, what did we think about it? So we'll start with you, Bina. What did you make of the fourth season of House of Cards?
I suspect I'm going to be against consensus because I didn't like it as much as the previous season, which I really liked. So I know that might prove controversial.
Adam, you have a different opinion?
I don't know. I didn't like last season that much, to be honest. Just there was, it just didn't feel as good as the earlier seasons, and the Jordan Valley and just a lot of stupid stuff I didn't like. And I felt this season was a bit more ridiculous, but also, I had more fun watching it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'd say if anything, they've kind of embraced like the craziness of the show. I think in season one, they were concerned with like it trying to be sort of realistic to some degree, but now they've just been like, yeah, nothing really matters too much. Let's just have a little fun with this. But what did you think, Steve?
I actually wasn't a big fan of season three. I thought, in my opinion, the show kind of lost its way in the middle two seasons. Season two and season three felt a bit like a mess to me. And season four was much more of a return to what I was interested in the show from season one. So I enjoyed season four overall.
Okay. And Jeff?
To be honest, I don't really remember season three. Like the one part I can remember, I didn't like it as much. So I think this one was better. That's about it.
Yeah. I think that's
back
the problem.
In the heady days of 2015.
Right. I think the problem kind of with the way that these shows are watched, at least for me, is that I do kind of not remember them. A year later when we're going back to watch the next season, like just watching like 12 or 13 episodes in such a short span, it all feels like very intense in the moment, but afterward it doesn't really leave a lasting effect. I guess that might be to more of an extent with season three, which I also was not a fan of. I did like season four as well. I liked it a lot, obviously, I guess because I got through it really fast. I've watched all the seasons pretty fast, so maybe that's not a good metric. But I thought just the central, of course, the most important part of the show is Frank versus Claire, or Frank and Claire working together at other points. And we really got that a lot in this season. And I thought that was all very well done, especially the first half of the season. I thought was pretty solid. I will say, like, my biggest issue is all, like, every other character in the show, I feel like, is so underserved, and they're just trying to have too many, doing too much stuff, and we'll get into that, but yeah, I just think, or not doing enough, and I just think, like, all the other characters are really not pulling their weight in this show, and that is my big gripe. But yeah, so let's go ahead and get into it. I think this episode or this season for me is kind of separated into three arcs, the first being this moment, leading off of the last season where we have Claire and Frank kind of squaring off, trying to power play against each other. We open with Claire going off to Texas to try to get the representative seat. I can't remember what district it's in, but she goes back home, the 30th district. And that of course, doesn't end up working out because Frank interferes and there's a lot of conflict between them, which culminates in Frank's attempted assassination on the campaign trail by Lucas Goodwin, who is, of course, the journalist back from season one and two, who wants vengeance for all the evils that Frank has brought in his life. So what did you guys think about this part of the season?
I mean, it was my favorite part of the season because what I really enjoyed in season three was Frank versus Claire, because I felt that sort of after 2.5 seasons of Frank and Claire versus the world, and they'd gotten away with so much that the only new place they could take the show was to have them go against each other, because they're the only people smart enough to really and knowing enough that what if they went against each other, that would be really interesting. And so the first bit of the season where Claire looks like she's going to make a run, I found really fascinating, and I was so excited when I saw the mum being played by Ellen Burstyn as this kind of political financier. I thought, wow, you know, Neve Campbell as the campaign manager, it's going to be these strong Machiavellian women. And then there's the assassination attempt, and suddenly they're reunited, and it's them against the world. So, yeah, I really loved the start. and I was just sad they didn't pursue it fully.
Mm-hmm. Other thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it did feel kind of like half started. I don't know. I mean, the way it eventually comes around, I guess, makes sense. And I didn't really like that they were at odds with each other. I mean, I thought it was good story, but like for the characters, I kind of preferred them to be, you know, same team, because, you know, they've been together as long as they have, and they've got this open marriage, and it just sort of seems like they could just deal with whatever, because they're all about power and making things work, and it seemed a bit petty, kind of the way they were acting. I don't know, but it would have been interesting if they had taken that kind of full term.
Yeah, I never really understood why they were so opposed after the events of season three. Obviously, like there were disagreements, and there was the big stuff with Russia and everything, and just it kind of the fissure widened, I guess. But I mean, I do like the idea of them being against each other, but I don't think it's always executed very well. But I actually do still think that Claire is not necessarily on Frank's side. I think that for whatever reason or another, she is still working for herself till the very end of the season and probably into the next one.
Oh yeah, right. She's just looking for a bus to throw him under, I think.
Really? Yeah. So you guys don't think it's a genuine?
No, well, I think it is. I think that it's a genuine reconciliation. They love, you know, they love each other in their way and all that. But at the same time, I think she's reached a point where she's just like, well, it's, you know, it's me now. It's my turn now.
Yeah.
And especially with everything that we see at the end of the season going on, like, what the hell, right?
Because if she ends season five, which I'm hoping is the last one, again, just as his sort of evil henchman, then it's kind of like we've just not seen her go anywhere at all. I mean, that's why I found sort of second half of three and start of this season interesting, because otherwise she just ends up as this, okay, she gets kind of ancillary power through him, but it's kind of just a sad indictment of every career wife out there.
Yeah. You want to see Princess Buttercup as the leader of the free world, right?
Yeah, basically.
I thought, though, that she came off really shallow and entitled throughout the first, like, half of how, like, she doesn't get what she wants, so she throws a giant hissy fit of how she comes from this affluent background and thinks that everything just should be handed to her. And I know she works for it to some point. I just thought, like, it just came really off shallow of how Frank is willing to, like, sacrifice and make compromises, and Claire just, like, puts her foot down and, like, does a little stomp until she gets what she wants.
I agree with you insofar as I think it was, there's this one speech he gives where he says, you don't understand what it's like to have nothing, and that's why you're willing to throw it all away. You don't appreciate what we've created. I thought that there was a lot of weight to that when you see like how amazing her family house is and, you know, where she's come from.
Like I agree whole with South Carolina scene with the whole, like, the picture of how that's the one moment Frank was actually proud of his father, and like how that completely touched him, and like how Claire's just like, fuck it, we'll just throw it to the wind and try to tank it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I agree, Jeff, how you characterized Claire, but I think that came across more in season three. And what I liked about the start of season four is that Claire was actually acting on her own to, like, a capable, independent political actor seeking her own office. I think she was a little ham-fisted, you know, especially the racial politics of her bid for Congress. But I think a lot of what season four is about, at least the first part, is to convince the viewing audience that Claire and Frank are equals, that she's not her henchman, that she's just as capable, and, you know, they both have this, like, mutually assured destruction. Like, Claire has all the tools she needs to bring Frank down if she wants. And so they come to the stalemate, and I don't view them as a loving couple or a team anymore. I view them as allies. Like, Claire is out for her own ends. I think Neve Campbell's character embodies that, but they've agreed to work together for the time being.
Yeah, I think that I think that you can make the argument, I guess, that Claire doesn't deserve it, that she's never had any kind of political capital, so why does she think that she deserves X and Y? But I mean, I think when you would take a step back, you can see that she has clearly been a part of much of what Frank has been able to accomplish up to this point. And I think that for that reason, you can see why she would feel like she deserves something at some point, right?
Mm-hmm. I could be wrong, but did anybody else feel like on a meta level that there was a shift from, like, pushing Kevin Spacey to pushing Robin Wright? That is her name, correct?
Yeah.
Well, she directed, like, a lot of the episodes, no? She directed four or five of the episodes, I believe, this season. Yeah. But I actually almost thought it was the opposite, that last season she was becoming a much more of a focus and it was about her struggle and who she wanted to be. And that this season, when the switch happens and she just goes back to being a career wife, or maybe with an agenda, but still kind of on the same side as Frank, that's when she starts directing episodes. And I had actually wondered whether the narrative shift was to give her more time to do the direction, because they couldn't have her be this big Machiavellian anti-evil person, because it would have been too heavy. And then the other thing I was wondering was, because I guess Netflix has all this really interesting ratings data we never see, is whether last season was really unpopular. And so they had to kind of very quickly get them back on side, because that hadn't worked. But we'll never know, I guess.
Yeah, one day it would be nice if they released that sort of stuff. I mean, you know, maybe even like years back or something. But because it's such a different way that we view things, like, you know, how quickly people view them. And I mean, it's almost like watching a movie or even, I guess, a miniseries, really, you know, when you do it so quickly. And it does make kind of retention a bit harder. But I mean, I think Netflix just cares that, you know, like Daredevil's coming out. And, you know, of course, people are going to watch that in a weekend, like, you know, and then forget about it for a year almost. Right. Mm-hmm. Like they just want those viewers. So,
yeah.
OK, so you guys have been mentioning Neve Campbell's character a lot. What did you guys think of Leanne Harvey, the campaign manager? In general,
I liked her early on.
Yeah, she doesn't really seem to. I mean, she sticks around, obviously,
when for the money.
Yeah, but it's kind of. I feel she was a bit kind of like they didn't really know, a bit like Ellen Burstyn. I mean, Ellen Burstyn could have been this great evil character, but I guess they just didn't choose to go that way.
Maybe next season they would use her more effectively.
Yeah, it was good to see her back on TV, though. I can't recall the last time I saw her in something.
Reruns of Wild Things? I don't know.
Party of Five.
Oh, I liked her at the beginning, but then it just seemed like, how y'all were mentioned, she just faded in the background and just became just such a weak character, and it was kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
The way I started to look at her, she starts to become almost like the stamper for Claire.
Yeah.
And she does provide like an effective counterbalance to Doug Stamper in this season. Like, she actually... Like, unlike Seth, who's completely incapable of going against Doug in many ways, like, she actually has influence and power outside of him, because hers is a direct line to Claire.
Yeah.
And Claire has significant heft inside the team, for lack of a better word.
She brings in the hilarious IT guy as well, so.
Yeah, he's great.
Like, he's dancing. She does get pretty wrapped up in the whole NSA surveillance subplot, which I thought was, I don't know. I didn't think that was too interesting, but...
Me neither.
It didn't go anywhere, really.
Yeah.
They're laying track for next season, I think.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah, I wasn't too enthused by her, but it's, I guess it's cool that she's around. I think they need a competent campaign manager, and that is what she's billed as, so that's cool.
I found the NSA stuff kind of an interesting approach to take on domestic spying. So if you read anything about how modern campaigns are run or kind of how strategy is developing in that area, it's all about data mining and targeting voters and isolating them.
Right.
So the whole idea of turning the NSA into a giant voter database is really horrifying in a way, but it's kind of the logical extreme conclusion of what parties are doing now.
Do you think it really is? Gosh, that's absolutely horrific.
Well, I mean, if they could get away with it.
So if you, I'm trying to think of the title of the book. Sasha Eisenberg wrote this book about how basically data is driving elections now. And it's all the sorts of interesting things where companies are collecting data about Americans, like the places you shop with your credit card and the magazines you subscribe to and the kind of house you live in and the car you drive. And that can tell them, like, well, you're 98% likely to be a Democrat, and given that you live here, guns are probably an important issue to you.
Wow.
And they can generate, you know, mailings to say, you know, let's target these voters. They'll send out a piece of mail to millions of Americans all across the country that will be to support a particular presidential candidate on a specific issue. You know, you add in the data you could get if you're monitoring everyone's text message, cell phone calls and web activity, and all of a sudden, like, you don't have a partial picture of everyone, you have a very complete picture of what everyone's levers and buttons are.
So this is actually happening right now. This is
obviously the NSA.
It's more like what the Conways are doing, right? With like search engines and things like that, right?
Yeah.
They're both connected. Yeah.
Yeah, and it makes you sound less tone deaf if you send a mailer out, you know, says like, oh, you know, talking about, you know, gun rights to someone who doesn't give a shit, right?
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's all little smoke and mirrors.
Going off of that point, I know in the past there are stories about how companies would send women like brochures about pregnancy before like they even knew they were pregnant, and it turns out that half the time the company was right.
Yeah.
That happens a lot, and that's based off of like things they're buying.
It was Target like, who did the pregnancy one.
Their credit card information or their store value, you know, loyalty card or whatever. Like everyone's selling your info now, and it's kind of sick.
I mean, you can see it for yourself. All you have to do is, if you have a Gmail account and you start Googling vacation and then a country, you'll start noticing you'll get promotional ads at the top of your internet about those locations, travel agency deals, things like that. Like, that's a very simplified version of what this is.
Like, Facebook, you'll be scrolling through and you'll see an item that you looked at yesterday on your Facebook. But what's creepier to me is when I haven't searched for something and I talked about it with my wife the day before, and like no one in our, and like it's like I think my phone is listening to me or something, because then I'll get an ad about the same shit I was talking about an hour or two ago, and I haven't typed it in. I haven't, like, you know, I don't know. I get paranoid, but I seriously feel like there's something like my phone is listening and like telling Google what I'm saying or some shit. I don't know.
Hey Siri. She's always on.
I am here to help you and spy for Apple.
Did anyone else find the whole like State of the Union being used as a lever for election, like for Frank's campaign, to be completely unbelievable, that people wouldn't like have a huge issue with that? I don't know.
That's super crass. Like that's some brazen politicking that usually you don't see in the State of the Union, I don't think.
I mean, obviously not a whole lot's believable, but I don't know. I just found that a little off-putting.
But, you know, how are we defining believable right now? Because Trump.
Fair enough.
Yeah, right?
All right.
The second arc we get, of course, is after the attempted assassination of Frank, which is stopped by Meacham. Poor Meacham. Rest in peace.
But you knew he was going to die, right? When he starts, like, drawing around his hand on the wall.
Right.
You're like, oh.
He had a rough season. He had a really rough season.
And they removed that damn handprint, too. Not cool, guys.
I know.
I guess they have to.
The season opens with him. What is he doing? He's like I don't know. He's like a porn narrator for his cellmate or something. Like, what is up with that?
For Goodwin, yeah, that was an interesting opening. But yeah, he's got to get. And he was it was like a sting thing, right? He was trying to get him to give him information so he could get.
Yeah.
He's at it rough as well.
Yep.
Yeah. And, of course, following this, we do have Frank going into a coma. He needs a liver, so we have Stamper going into Stamper action to get him that liver. Meanwhile, Claire helps out Donald Blythe, the acting president, with the oil crisis with Russia, which is ostensibly resolved. So what about this part, guys? What do you think?
First off, I thought Frank's hallucinations were really cool.
Really?
Yeah. Normally I don't go for that stuff, but one thing I did like about this season, and I think, Zach, you brought it up a little bit earlier, the fact that they keep bringing characters back from previous seasons I thought was good, because a lot of the times the show hasn't used them well, but when they return, they feel like they bring some impact. So being tortured by Russo and Zoe in his ammonia-induced hallucinations was pretty cool, in my opinion.
Oh, man. Because I think, for me, the high bar of characters in a coma dreaming shit on TV is Tony Soprano, where he becomes. And, you know, the way they used those was just very, very surreal and quite funny, but did shed a little bit of light on his character, like the Finity alter ego. And I just thought it just felt kind of quite lazy, like the way they used it. Oh, he's going to have nightmares and be taunted by his guilt. Like, they could have done something so much more fascinating. With his, because he has a complex psychosexual undercurrent, right? I mean, they could have done some really fascinating shit there, but I thought it was a bit of a missed opportunity myself.
Yeah, I'm more in that camp. I thought it was okay, but I think you're right. There could have done more. I don't know. It just it feels a little not. I don't know. Maybe Frank is extremely guilty about murdering these two people, but it feels like that's not really what he's about. Like, that's not the thing that's stuck on his conscience, but I guess it is. I don't know.
I felt it was just kind of convenient, like, the whole situation, just, like, conveniently getting rid of Meacham for the show. And then showing how Blythe could just not be a good running mate or a good replacement. Just, like, it just seemed like the whole thing was set up just to you know, engineer a reason why he shouldn't be around.
Actually, I really liked the interactions between Clara and Donald Blythe. I thought it really showed how she is equal to Frank, kind of, because she is so superior to him. She takes complete control. She's not willing to let him in the same way that she has been with Frank, and I thought that was all pretty well done.
Yeah, but he's a terrible president, is what I'm saying.
Sure, yeah.
I just was amazed at how, like, Durant got shit on completely. Like, I don't... Like, the Secretary of State would never be that weak, and, like, that would never happen, that the First Lady would overpower the Secretary of State.
Yeah. I mean, when you have a First Lady like this, I don't know.
It's the interesting situation created by taking Frank out of commission is that it creates a giant power vacuum in the administration, especially because Blythe is willing to listen to Claire. So even though you're right, like, the First Lady can't give instructions to the Secretary of State, if she convinces Blythe to give her an order, then she has to follow it. You know, constitutionally speaking.
Right, but, like, the whole, like, once you go to the conference or the summit, there's no way that, like, the president's authority would kind of extend to the point that, yeah, Durant has to bring Claire along, but then it would be Durant that's talking the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was clear that this wasn't officially done. This wasn't necessarily what was supposed to happen. It was,
yeah, this very was clearly
behind closed doors. Yeah, yeah. It wasn't. Yeah. I mean, I think it made sense to me that that's how it could have worked out, especially given who Claire is and what her position was at the time.
Yeah, but, like, I always thought it was weird that Petrov actually even cared about Claire's opinion after, like, she kind of shit the bed so much with the union being the UN ambassador.
Yeah, but he's, like, he's got this creepy thing for her, so.
He wants to fuck her.
Yeah. He's running around on a horse without a shirt off. I mean, come on.
It's the stupid thing about this show, right? Like, most motivations can be put down to someone wanting to shag someone else. It's just hilarious.
So the other, I guess, I don't know, it's a minor point. Other thing we get at this part of the story is, of course, Dunbar's campaign is kind of grinds to a halt after it's revealed that she had a conversation with Lucas Goodwin. This seemed like a kind of contrived excuse for getting her out of the race.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was it felt like a weak punch in the story there to have him show up, and, you know, it's just kind of a little tangent. He shows up, and now that's the whole thing that takes this, you know, competition completely off the map, which, I mean, they needed to do, you know, to get to the actual presidential race later on. But
people come back from bigger scandals on the campaign trail in this series than that.
Yeah, and in real life too. Like, yeah, this big of a deal to a modern. You know, I say that, but, like, you know, to, like,
I don't know,
a modern populace.
Okay, if a political rival was associated with a person who attempted to assassinate the sitting president, you don't think that would destroy their political career?
Well, but the association is different than saying this dude showed up and he was talking like crazy, and we were like, "Look, we don't want to talk to you," and we sent him away.
You Which know, is exactly what happened. Well, yeah, I think that is what happened, and
which, like, could even... like. If, right. Unless he said, "I'm going to go kill the president," then what? Like, what's your? I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, but there's no,
there's nothing.
You know, it's this isn't like, let's play this out in courts and with a reasonable people. Like, let's play this out with the media and the internet, where it's like, oh, of course they didn't say that. It's like, well, how do we know that he didn't approach you on this topic? How do we know you didn't benefit in some way with this meeting? Like, what did he say to you, except for something like this? Like, what could Lucas Goodwin have brought Dunbar? You know, like, please
That's
listen
a good
to me,
point.
Have connections in the Justice Department. Like, who's going to believe that?
I mean, people, I'm sure people would have been speculating, but I do think that you could have spun the story in such a way that it would have been clear that she wasn't involved in any way. I think you could have spun the story. Just the idea, like, this crazy person who hated Frank Underwood came to his biggest rival trying to get her help, and she completely shut
up. But it would all be how sympathetic the media coverage is and how they're willing to slant it and who they put on and... Because, I mean, like, I was watching something just, you know, last night, I think, and they were talking about Who was it? Was it Ted Cruz or something was talking about Trump, like something he said in some conversation, and like, well, he can't prove he didn't say it. Why isn't he releasing the tapes to prove he didn't say it? You know, which I guess was like a private conversation. Yeah. So you're like, well, that's, I don't know whether he did or not. Or I don't, you know, I wasn't paying attention to the whole deal, but it's like, yeah, that's a very common kind of political argument. It's like, well, you know, someone says he might have done this thing, and you know, you can't prove that, and so until you can prove it, I'm just going to float this idea that maybe that, you know, it's not impossible.
You can't prove you're not the Zodiac killer.
The craziest thing about that particular situation is that supposedly those tapes are Trump having a more moderate opinion on immigration, which apparently is a bad thing for him to show. But yeah,
but there are two Trumps. There are two Trumps.
Right.
As Dr. Carson tells us.
There's also the theory that, like, Trump is running to get his buddy Hillary elected.
Of course.
Really?
No, not really.
I have heard that.
Illuminati.
So I think that's about it for this part of the arc. Anything else?
I was just going to say, like, with Dunbar, you have to remember that a scandal affects a candidate differently depending on who that candidate presents themselves as. True. So Dunbar has very much like the law and order, like above board. Everything is squeaky clean and transparent.
That's her whole case.
Following is built along this. Like, we need to clean up the White House, and then any association, any taint, destroys her key attribute in defeating Frank.
That's fair enough. Yeah,
I would say going off that point, it wouldn't have like destroyed her campaign until she called the attorney general and had that conversation. And once Frank disclosed that conversation.
Right.
I forgot about that.
Right.
Could I ask a question? Does anyone here give a crap about Remy Danton and Jackie Sharp getting it on?
Nope.
I don't care.
Oh my God. Like, up until the point where they actually shop, like, Frank and Claire, so they become relevant again. It's like, why do we need to see Remy Danton running out of fuel at a petrol station?
It's true. The only thing I find remotely interesting about Remy Danton is we get it later that he is someone who's in the know, who's not necessarily in the Underwood camp, who ends up giving some information. I think that's the only thing about him.
They could
him
have brought him back later for that.
Yeah.
I thought the most interesting thing is that we learned he was Haitian. I was like, oh, that's
interesting. Yeah.
That was super interesting.
It's only interesting if he's got a choice.
Sure, fair enough.
I like most of the actors, they just have to give them something to do.
Yeah, and exactly. Like, yeah, this is no criticism of the actors, it's just like how they're handled, obviously.
Yeah, and of course we get also Raymond Tusk coming back, everyone's favorite tycoon.
Oh yeah.
To help solve the problem. But yeah, we move sort of to the final part of the season where it's really the general election getting into full swing, I suppose, even though there isn't an elected or a chosen candidate for either party necessarily yet. With the Conways, the Republican side of things that we get. Of course, the counterpoint to Frank and Claire.
Ugh.
Oh. How did you guys like the Conways?
Ugh.
Has anybody here seen The Killing? Have you guys seen that show?
I've seen season one and part of two.
And like the first scene where they show up, his wife looks a lot like the actress on that show, and I was like, did they just cast both of them for the show? It took me a second to realize it was a different actress.
I would agree that they're both redheads, but they look very different.
Well, like in that first scene, like you're not seeing her face very much, and just like they're very, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like they're very similar to, and then we get a clear shot and I'm like, okay, that's a different person. But it took a good, I don't know, like 90 seconds I think or something into that scene.
Oh, so completely sidetracked, but I wanted to bring this up before I forgot it. What did y'all think about the really fucked up scene with the portraits of Kennedy, Reagan, and then Frank? And like,
I love that shit.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
I thought that was classic. Like, I missed the fourth wall breaking that they toned down a lot in season three.
I completely
agree. In season four, I counted, and I think almost every episode has a fourth wall breaking moment, and I think that sets up what that like Conway Underwood fight is about. Like, Conway is supposed to be almost an homage to Kennedy, like a modern day Kennedy, and Frank with his NSA spying and his scheming, like, is supposed to be Nixon.
Yep.
So. Like, there you go. Here's what we're playing with, guys. Behold.
Oh, also, I saw this in comments. Are you surprised that Claire didn't break the fourth wall at any point? Because there are so many moments.
She does at the end. She does
last scene.
Oh, yeah.
Supposedly. Yeah, we do get this, of course. I think the first part of this is if you guys want to talk about it, Claire kind of pushing this gun control bill after Frank is shot.
Oh, right.
How does that turn out? Does it get passed? I can't remember.
No, it dies in the Senate.
Yeah. All pointless, basically, in the end.
Which is there's a lot of stuff where they set up where it's like, you know, like in the show, I imagine they would set up like, oh, there's going to be some sort of new abortion law. Oh, and it doesn't get passed. Like, the show just likes to cover big topics and then not have anything come of them.
I guess it's a lever to push Claire's candidacy as the vice president to show she has more political experience, I guess.
Did anybody else think, sorry if I've cut anybody off, back, like, I guess in the first arc when Claire's like, I want to be your vice president, and, like, Frank laughs, did y'all laugh too, or you're like, oh, I see where this is going?
Well, I saw where it was going, especially after he woke up and said that she's not his wife anymore. But yeah, I still find it completely unbelievable, like even now.
Yeah, especially because she got so much shit for being inexperienced before, and you know, I don't know.
She didn't really get that much
experience in the interim.
She was a horrible ambassador, and she actually wasn't that successful running her nonprofit, was she? From what we know from season one, thinking back, so.
Nope.
Yeah.
It's all about the marketing, I guess.
She's good at, like, dealing with people behind the scenes, but yeah, she hasn't really, she hasn't had much of a career, just to be honest. Like, she's no Hillary, right? Like. Mm-hmm.
So speaking of which, of course, we get all the scheming for who is going to be Frank's VP, and it seems like he's steering it towards Catherine Durant, but indeed he is, he's gunning to get Frank in that position, or get Claire in that position
I'm a bit confused by this, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the president just names their fucking VP usually. I'm sure that they discuss, and there's a little bit of this, like, you know, backhanded stuff going on, but he doesn't. He could have just said, "I'm naming Claire. Suck it." And like, yeah, maybe that it wouldn't have been accepted very well. And this is kind of all this maneuvering is to get the people on board. But you know, maybe there are other ways to do
exactly
that. But it's so damn risky.
Like, normally you're right. The convention confirms this election, though.
Right.
So
yeah.
If ever one of the parties has a divided convention, like, they can pick whoever they want, technically, just like we see in the show.
Which is nuts, but
I mean, that's how if
he had said, well, and you know, because we didn't have the internet or telephones, but if he had said, "Hey, you know, Claire's my running mate," and they showed up to the convention, you think everyone would have been like, "New presidential candidate," like.
It would have been probably a tough pill to swallow if they just dumped it on them.
It wouldn't have worked. I think that is the whole point, right? Like, they could have just named Claire VP, and the whole point was to make it clear to the DNC that, yes, we're looking at these candidates, and it was all a smokescreen to get her in a position where she could be seen as a viable VP.
Yeah, but it just seems like he does it for about a dozen people that he's trying to please. Like, no one else really... I mean, the people kind of see... The people start to accept her through all of this, you know, at the convention. But for everyone else, like him, you know, looking at this candidate, looking at that candidate, like, no one else gives a shit.
Just as
that's
a,
true.
As
it's
as
all
a,
it's all to get clear.
As a side note, in actual history, has the convention ever refused to confirm the president's pick for vice president?
I think you'd have to go back to when the convention actually picked the vice president for something like that. Like, early in America's history, the vice presidents and presidents often hated each other and were vicious political rivals.
As opposed to LBJ, JFK.
Well, because they ran against each other. It was the loser that got to be the vice president.
Which is kind of the way it is now, right?
But they're in the same party still, of course.
No, but it was like the other party.
Oh, right. Now it's the same party. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Just actually kind of a cool idea.
Like, I don't know, FDR had really bad relationships with his vice presidents, but I don't know if that's because the convention and the party kind of forced it on him, or if he was, you know, he had to pick a Southern racist to balance the ticket.
We get Catherine Durant making her power play that she I don't know how she did it, but she got some votes as president, not as vice president, which throws a wrench into things because that brings Dunbar back into the race, back in contention, which could potentially throw a wrench into Frank's, you know, lock on the nomination. And the way that And the way that he handles it, of course, is this, I guess, for a lot of people, coup de grace scene between Frank and Catherine Durant in the Oval Office, where he lays down the law, says that he killed Zoe Barnes, killed what's Corey Stoll's character name again?
Peter Russo.
Peter Russo. And of course, he's like, "Oh no, I'm joking," and that's the. For many people,
that was awesome. Like that bit, because I thought, why is he telling her this? And then he like makes it a joke. It's like, oh shit, great writing.
Do you think that like Durant thinks he's serious, or that it was a joke?
I think she suspects. No,
I think she knows he's dangerous, even if he didn't actually do it. Like he's capable. I think is kind of the point, right?
I think so. I think that yeah, he's ruthless. It's clear that he will throw her into the bus, and she can't. She doesn't want to test him, I guess is the idea. It was a good scene for sure. I do again, I find it a little odd, but it's a, you know, it's like a backroom kind of thing. You could, I mean, if there's a president like Frank, you could maybe see something like this happen.
I thought that I think the ending of episode 9 where Louisiana throws its support behind Durant is one of the best moments in this season.
Yeah.
Because it's that total like you as a viewer or at least speaking for myself, like your stomach kind of drops, like what the hell is actually happening right now in this show?
It was because, well done, yeah.
Because it's like, hey, guess what? The Underwoods aren't the only ones who can manipulate people and shape events, and sometimes Frank's plans get screwed with. That's not just the Russians being jerks. And it's like, this is amazing. This is what I love. I love that feeling about the show.
And it really is what it should be about, I think, yeah, is the sort of power plays.
And they did a good job of creating excitement in that scene. And then confusion, and was it Alabama that voted for the mayor, one of their mayors or something?
Yeah,
they did. The mayor of Mobile got some votes.
the whole brokered convention was pretty well done. Just as scenes, they were pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. Actually, I have no idea if that's what a real convention's like, but I think they really captured the excitement of what that kind of feverish, lots of really excited. Political hacks getting together and, you know, small states drunk on their power, of the, you know, their moment of the spotlight.
Well, that is what it looks like.
Five delegates.
Like on TV, everybody's there and they've got their signs for their states and there's the delegations and people are yelling and screaming. But usually, like, you know, everything's decided at that point already. So,
yeah.
And then California's like, here's my 580 delegates.
I'm going to lay down all these votes, bitches.
Are they like, you know, sit back down, Montana, let me just sweep you all aside.
New Jersey, you're not needed.
They just asked the big states to vote first, so whether or not they can break early for lunch.
Yeah.
Alphabetical makes no sense in this situation. But hey, it's Delaware's time to shine.
I mean, hey, you need to have the illusion of fair elections.
And isn't that what democracy is all about? And the main theme of House of Cards, the illusion of democracy.
Did anybody else think it was kind of weird how, like, Conway decided to call Durant and be like, hey, you should get Louisiana to do this? I feel like that kind of weakened Durant, and I feel like she would have done it herself.
Yeah, agree. Were you all impressed by Conway as a political operator? Or do you think we've not seen enough of him yet to sort of make that? Cool.
I don't understand why. So he's supposedly the very charismatic vote, right? That's his whole thing, right? He's the young, cool guy. But he doesn't seem cool at all. He seems very stiff and unappealing.
But he's so pretty looking.
He is very pretty looking. That is true.
And maybe he's got adorable. I mean, I don't think so, but he's got adorable kids. I mean, he's the poster child aspirational, I guess. That's the point there.
I'm sure I wasn't the only one, and only Canadian to think of this, but he actually reminded me a lot of our current new prime minister, who is young and attractive with a very appealing family.
Yeah.
And social media savvy.
Trudeau is pretty looking.
Gagged. Yeah.
I think it would be kind of interesting if, like, the next season is watching him, like, slowly be corrupted and become more and more like Frank, and watching how his wife reacts and, like, how is she, if she's really going to follow Claire as her role model, or if she's just going to continue to be disgusted.
Well, we do get a little bit of that. She has the whole, like, don't get weak on me line. Yeah.
Which brings me to my favorite exchange in the whole season, which is when Conroy's wife asks Claire, do you regret not having children? And Claire says to her, do you regret having them?
Oh, shit.
As someone who doesn't have children, that's the kind of line I wish I could use that in real life so often.
You can, Bina. You can.
It's gonna be like surrounding.
And I love how they cut away to just let you, like, imagine how awkward that shit was.
Yeah, exactly.
She's just wrestling with the truth, that's all. Yeah.
Yep.
Sometimes it sucks.
So speaking of that, we do have, of course, Frank and Conway Fellow coming together to deal with fake ISIS and their fake ISIS stuff. That's kind of the culminating plot point for them.
Ooh. Oh, wait, can we bring up the general real quick? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, he's a big character. He's very slight for a general.
Yeah. He's in shape. He works out.
I liked him.
I don't know. He's the general. He's the moral.
I think it's funny how, like, he doesn't want to do the political move, and then he does the political move, and then, like, he realizes how disgusted he is with himself.
Because a man who's worked his entire life in strategy couldn't have jumped one step ahead and realized how disgusted he would have been with himself. It's such a bum move.
And the fact that he legitimately thought that, oh, well, if I resign, this is going to get some shit done, at least, you know, or then, you know, we'll win the election, then I'll get some shit done, like, I don't know.
Mm.
Fooling himself. Especially after Conway's, you know, they want to take a hard line, and then, okay, well, let's prevent him from taking a hard line so we can take a hard line later, like, that was, like, I don't know. If I were him, that would have been the moment where I just would have said, here's what, you know, I would have gone to the press and said, look, here's what's going on. This is despicable. I don't care if it ruins our campaign. Like, this is bullshit. Like, if he really believes so strongly and that's why he resigned, then, you know, that's the obvious move, right?
But, like, I feel like there are some people that actually think that's how politics works and, like, how, in some sense, the U.S. operates of, like, they just sensationalize war and, like, rather than getting things done, they'll just perpetuate it.
Hmm.
That's probably very inflammatory.
I don't think so.
No, I think there's, I think it's kind of, there's definitely, I don't know if people apply it to foreign policy, but there definitely is a feeling that, like, in America, you govern for 6 months and then you start having elections again. Like, okay. As a country that borders your country, you know, a lot of times our leaders are like, well, we'd like to deal with the Americans, but they're not listening to us right now because they have to vote. And it's like, Obama has 18 months left, guys. Like, we can try to get something that's like, no, everyone's gone. Congress is empty. They're all running for re-election. It's like, okay.
Yeah, like, Congress, I think, is constantly in an election mode, it seems, these days. You know, they're always fighting for the next term. The Senate, a little less so because they have the longer terms. But the president should at least have, you know, 3 out of 4 years where he doesn't have to deal with that shit. But
and then the justices just don't give a shit because it's for life.
For life. Yeah.
Indeed. We do actually get, interestingly, a comment about a Supreme Court justice nomination in this season, which is interesting. That I think it's also in last season. It's interesting that they sort of preempted this situation that we have in real life now, too.
Can I make a brief tirade? I'll keep it short. Sure.
Please do. Okay.
So Conway a couple times makes a speech about, like, the origins of the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
And one, I think his origins are wrong. I'd have to go back and check. But the Republican Party, you know, is usually dates itself from the Lincoln era, and he talks about the founding fathers, and I mean, sometimes they borrow, but that, I think that's just plain wrong. And then he calls Thomas Jefferson a conservative.
Yeah, I know. Even I noticed that, and I'm English.
Thomas Jefferson was many things. A conservative, not really. And that was just like, come on, show writers, crack open a history book. Or it's like, this guy purposely a boob? Like, I don't understand.
Well, maybe that's part of it, though. Maybe you just make that speech and you don't care, because people just eat up whatever you say.
Right.
Yeah, but there's also the fact that, like, what the definition of a Republican and a Democrat has changed so many times. Like, there's arguments that if Kennedy ran today, he would be a moderate Republican, and stuff like that.
Sure. But it's just frustrating.
He's wrong.
Like, I shook my head a lot at that stuff. And Conway, to me, I agree, like, he was very stiff, and then I wondered if it was a like, the way he gave speeches, was he supposed to be kind of this robotic guy? Like, he's more natural in his weird social media campaign than giving a stump speech. I think the actor might have been the wrong choice for that role, mainly because I thought of him as, like, a tweaked-out meth addict from The Killing.
Not the charismatic.
I don't know, I liked him for the role, but yeah, I definitely can understand what you're saying.
Did the Skype videos freak y'all out at all? Like, it kind of freaked me out.
I don't know. I find it strange that there is nothing incriminating in his entire recorded history. When he
no, makes... because he's been planning it. That's the creepy part. Is he was going to do this all along, so he's been keeping everything off media.
Yeah.
Adam. you're totally right. I guess that's his whole thing. Any thoughts on...
Yeah, like, Conway is super cynical. Like, as a young man, he joined the Air Force right after 9/11 because it would be brilliant for his future career. Like, that's...
Whew. Like Trump, there's several versions of him.
Yeah, no, it's... There seems to be, like, the public face for Conway and the backdoor face, but then there's, like, two different kind of backdoor faces for him. It's... I don't know. It's like it's hard to tell what he even believes sometimes. Like,
well, he has a fake backdoor face, right? He has like a fake
because
that's part of his public persona is his fake real life persona,
fake private
but some,
life. Yeah.
Some of his like, you know, I'm just in it for power stuff. Sometimes it doesn't even feel, maybe that's the actor, but sometimes it doesn't even feel like he fully buys that shit when he spits it out. You know, like sometimes if it's like maybe he's like pumping himself up with that shit almost, but. Maybe. But then, like, yeah, like, he joined the Air Force and then, like, oh, I regret everything I did. And I'm like, is like that, like, that seemed like an act to me, you know?
Yeah, I think.
Like, all that shit.
I think the most damning line is when his wife's like, yeah, and, both, like, politically, like, in both worlds. When she's talking about, like, how, like, being from England, like, I don't care about guns and, like, neither he does. But the party.
But the party is, has to care.
Does anyone know where that actress is from? Because I'm about to say she's got a terrible English accent, but she'll probably end
up... It's not real.
She'll probably end up being English if I say that, but...
I don't think it's a real accent. I'm pretty confident, and I'm not, like, an authority on this, but I'm pretty sure that's a fake accent.
It was a bit, cool, blimey, Governor, strike a light. by which I mean Dick Van Dyke from Mary Poppins is the archetypal bad English accent.
Wait, Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins was bad?
Hello, Mary.
Isn't that how all of you people talked back then?
You people. Oh, which reminds me, actually, as we speak of Finley Velbrose, isn't that one of my favorite scenes is, like, the only guy who actually stands up to Frank and tells him just to sort of, you know, bugger off is Freddie, who ran the Rib Shack.
Man.
And like when Frank is like so patronizing to him about his nice job in the White House and he wants to leave, and he is the only guy who just with a pride just turns around and tells him to fuck off, and I love it.
Fuck off.
And then he defends him later on too, which is crazy.
He doesn't snitch, of course. That's
yeah, because he doesn't snitch.
Yeah.
No, I know. He's such a great character. Like, and
like he won't be played just because he's angry at Frank. He won't be played by someone who wants to bring him down, like other people who.
Yeah, it's out of no respect for Frank.
Yeah.
That whole scene,
though,
doesn't
want to be anyone's pawn.
Exactly.
Like, Frank is such a dick there. Like, I mean, he should have been right away like, oh, you found another, like, I gave you this job as a charity, kind of, you know, but you're not going to, like, say that out loud, but just be like, oh, you found something else you like to do, and you've got a new career? Great, man. You know, let me know when I can place an order with you or some shit, you know? But instead, he's like, you know, yeah, come and make me some ribs. Like, he should have been like, well, how about we have a going away party for you, you know?
Yeah.
Or even if he's like, bring some ribs and have dinner with us, instead of like, hey, like, fucking make me some ribs and stay in the kitchen. Like, that was like, this guy should be a friend, really.
Yeah, exactly. And
definitely mistreated him.
So I do like.
I loved Freddy in seasons one.
Yeah.
And I think even in two and three, he was still pretty solid. So see him, like, I assume he's pretty much gone now from the show.
Oh, I don't think so. Because if you think that the final half of this season is all these people from their past coming back to haunt them, like Remy and Jackie, like, giving evidence, and Tom Hammerschmidt, the journalist, kind of retracing the steps. I hope Freddy has a part to play in the next season. I really do.
Also, I hope so, but I could see him being gone now forever, too.
Like the Hound, off to live in peace. Aww.
Quiet Isle, arranging flowers.
Yeah, exactly.
I kind of hope that for him, yeah. I hope he doesn't get killed somewhere by Frank.
But he's brought back to testify.
Right, yeah. That, by the way, Freddy, that actress is Irish. Just...
Oh, yeah, she is. Hmm. That's what I was looking up, too.
So do you guys have any more thoughts on the whole Hammerschmidt investigative subplot that ends up kind of one of our main
things? I kind of really liked it. because it was so nicely sprinkled out between the first, say, 10 episodes or so, that when it starts ramping up, that he's actually starting to put it all together, it feels a little more earned. Like, it didn't feel like this diversion, waste of time, that he was actually putting it all together.
Yeah, doesn't have it all together yet.
Nope.
I like that he's the character that does it, because obviously, to start, he was very against Zoe and the whole thing, and it's interesting that he is the one that's going to be maybe putting the knife in Frank once and for all.
Possibly. Yeah. I'm in a bit of a nostalgic mood for old-fashioned investigative journalism, having seen Spotlight. Yeah, and I just kind of, you know, that feeling of, would this even be possible now? Do people have the resources?
He gets the Spotlight room. Like, he gets that room in the Herald with a team of journalists. Like, yeah. He makes Spotlight.
He does. yeah.
But I thought it was super revealing how, what is it that happens, the hostage situation, that every journalist on his team is sucked away to work on a different story?
Exactly.
That is a great commentary on journalism. Like, what's on fire right now? Like, we're talking about a story that will bring down a presidency. Calm down. Someone else can report. AP can report the minute.
A lot of people can be on that. One thing, going back to the hostage thing, did you guys think when that first came up that maybe that was like a staged event?
Definitely.
Like,
it was a Conway thing.
Yeah, because I'm like, those people are obviously white.
They're radicalized.
Yeah, when they were very quickly like, oh, these, I'm like, oh, okay, so it's going to come out that he staged this shit, and, you know, and this is going to be a disaster, and that doesn't end up being the case, which I was actually kind of surprised by.
Do you think that's also, like, the showrunners, like, playing with our minds because they know that's what we would think, and it's kind of terrible social commentary on us?
Maybe.
I never actually thought that. I don't know.
Well, now I do.
I mean, it is clever the way they do the SWAT team attack. I mean, and show them in the Situation Room watching is. I mean, there's all sorts of episodes in this series where they sort of hint at real life events, like the famous footage we all know about Obama and Clinton watching the attack on Osama bin Laden. And I think you do get, or I did at least get a bit reminded of that. I think they're very culturally and socially aware, aren't they, the showrunners? Although interestingly, Bo Willimon isn't the showrunner anymore. I didn't realize. Like, apart from this last season? Yeah, apart from the final episode, he didn't write any of the episodes, and I think you could tell in the quality of the writing. Like, all the best sort of, like, Machiavellian one-liners that Frank and Claire have come in that final episode. So...
Did anybody else get kind of chills, like, just watching when, like, when Frank or Blythe just signed executive orders? You're like, oh! They're, like, sending people to die, and, like, it's just nonchalant, I'm gonna just sign my name here.
Oh, yeah. And on a humbug, right? Sending people to die because someone published a story about me and I need a distraction. Yeah. But he's a murderer, right? He's murdered people to advance his political career. So he's just logically taking it now to that 10th step. Rather than murdering one person, he's murdering thousands.
Yeah. He's got to get his now.
I also feel Conroy would have done that.
And I just got to say, I got to go, but I just want to say real quick, next season better be the final season, because if not, I don't know how the show continues. But, I really enjoyed this season, and I look forward to next year.
Claire is president. That's how it continues, Adam.
let's hope so. And then, well, then something crazy happens. Next season would be amazing if halfway through, like, he gets killed or gets written off or something. And then you're like, what?
It's all a dream. I mean, he's still in the coma.
Yeah, the back half of the season, he's like, he's completely out of it for some reason.
It's all been a dream, and he's really...
a peach farm.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all a snow globe.
I hope he gets killed by
metaphor,
the peach, right?
Because every little boy grows up, dreams to grow up to be president, and that's what it all is. His dad
that's
comes back
that that's the story the author would write, that fucking author.
Oh my.
I hate everything they do of excerpts of him. I hate it. It all sounds awful to me. But anyway.
Indeed.
See you later, Adam. Thank you for joining.
Bye. Yeah.
Bye.
We do get that the subplot affair with what's his name?
Tom Yates.
Oh, he's so boring. So,
he writes some nice speeches apparently.
Yeah. I'm so underwhelmed. It's a sort of underwhelmed contest between him and Remy Danton, I guess. Minor characters.
I thought it was like
I find all of the side characters so underwhelming. I even found Doug Stamper very underwhelming this season. He's supposed to be the good one.
See, this was my big criticism of the whole season, is that I can see why people like it, because it gets back to all the kind of relationships you have in season one, where it's Claire and Frank versus the world, and Doug is the loyal henchman. But it just felt like I'd seen all this before. Like, Oh, no shit. Doug Stamp is now going to get really sexually obsessed over the wife of the guy he killed. And he's going to start stalking her and go on dates with her and shit. And that's going to end up being really weird and messed up. And it just feels like I've done this before. Doug. He's just a ticking time bomb, right? I mean, he's going to go off at some point. Mega.
Yeah. Did you have something to say there, Stephen? Or,
you know? I can't remember anymore. Oh, I did like the part where Tom Yates sat down with Mrs. Hale. I thought that was interesting. Show that like Mrs. Hale just isn't this curmudgeonly demon woman who haunts Claire. That's why she's so cold and distant. But like, no, and it's not Claire. She can be a well-likable human being.
But was that whole storyline in there just basically to give them an excuse to explore assisted killing? Assisted dying, or whatever it's called?
No, it's just a reason so Claire would feel bad and could fuck him.
Oh, okay.
Grief sex,
yeah.
We do, of course, get the reaffirmation that Claire is after the artsy guys from the guy in season one, the photographer guy.
Oh, Daniels.
Yeah.
So. She has a type. Blonde artsy guys.
Apparently. Yeah. So, yeah, but... go ahead.
No, I was just going to say Ben Daniels was better looking than the guy who plays Tom Yates.
It's true.
Not debatable.
I think Conway, whatever his name is going to turn out to be quite fascinating. I keep being reminded of The Wire and how you have the sort of string of Bellas, the drug dealer, and then he gets the younger rival is, not Omar.
Marlowe.
And Marlowe's actually much more petrifying because he's quite psychopathic. He's just very quiet and efficient and just goes about his business without histrionics. And I sort of think that about Conway, that there's just so many facets to him. He's so cynical, so young, that actually he has the capacity to go to a much darker, weirder place than even Frank and Claire.
Yeah, well, that whole line, like, when he's like, fuck Frank, he's going to take all the press for this and, like, about the whole, like, hostage scene. And then his wife's just like, what if it was me and your daughter?
Mm.
Yeah, the weird press obsession does seem like it'll be interesting how that plays out. He's so concerned with his public opinion. When it's skewed badly, what will he do?
Right.
It also gives the showrunners a way to continue if Claire and Frank, if the actors are bored of doing it, or if the ratings allow them to continue beyond five seasons. They can either have them impeached or they can have them win, either way. But they leave the White House and then actually the show continues just with this new, very disturbing, weird couple in the White House.
I guess maybe. I don't know if I want to watch that show, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to watch that show either, but yeah. I mean,
I'm curious if the Conways have the dramatic potential to carry a show like this.
Right. This show is so carried by Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright. Like, I don't know if it works at all without them. I don't think so. Mm. So we were talking a little bit before about, like, how do you guys think that things are going to proceed forward into the next season? And I do also believe, I think you said this, Bina, that I do think that the only way this can possibly end, for me at least, is Claire throwing Frank under the bus and becoming president. It's something of that vein. As the VP.
So I was wondering if the violent fight scene that Frank flashes to between him and Claire isn't a premonition.
Oh.
Like it's actually going to happen. That they'll kill each other in the Oval Office or something.
Or that she'll kill him and become president.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't murder a person and then become right. president.
That's too direct. I figure she'll murder him, but not in like a stab him in the throat kind of way, like some kind of indirect.
Well, there's a lot of Shakespeare in House of Cards, especially, you know, the original UK one, but even this one leans on it a bit. Like this whole, like, now to win, we're going to be the most horrifying we can be, strike terror in the hearts of our enemies. Like they're in the speaking directly to camera. Like, so a final death struggle between Claire and Frank, like that wouldn't be weird. Like I could easily imagine like the last scene of season five is the Secret Service pounding on the door as Frank bleeds out and Claire sitting there with a piece of glass or a knife in her hand or whatever.
That'd be hilarious. Like, I don't think that's how it'll play out, but that would be quite funny.
I was thinking somewhere along the lines of somehow they get impeached and then, or like somehow they lose the election and the Conways do win, and it's just the cycle repeating itself of like how there's always just these schemers and it's like the changing of the guard.
Yeah, nothing ever changes.
Maybe. That seems boring to me, but it could be. It would be interesting to see them on the outs, maybe. I'm not sure if that would be where they go, but that could be interesting, I guess, if they're ostracized and something with that happens.
Where do you think it'll go, Zach?
Like I said, I think it will be Claire becoming president in the end in some way or another. I just feel like that she never stopped scheming against Frank. So yeah, that's what I'm convinced will happen. I think it's very much, you guys have been talking about the Shakespearean comparisons, but I think it's very much a mistake to compare Claire to Lady Macbeth, which is the most obvious comparison people make. I think she's very much, has always been the one that's been trying to get a step ahead of him. That never stopped.
Yeah.
So any other thoughts before we wrap this up?
Only just how brilliant that final scene is and how chilling. And kind of like brilliantly witty when she's like, we can work with fear. And Frank's like, yes, we can. Like spoofing the Obama phrase. Like
that was brilliant.
Let's turn this phrase, that this political campaign slogan that meant everything that was good and hopeful, maybe didn't get fulfilled, but at the time was very hopeful, and turn it into this damning, like, we are going to unleash the dogs of war and be damned with the consequences thing.
Are they also trying to, like, incite a big enough war where they just can't hold the election and, like, just delay the election, or no?
Do elections get delayed? What happened in World War II and stuff? Were there just no elections?
Regularly held elections occurred.
Yeah, so that doesn't stop elections, does it?
Oh, no, that was after FDR, they changed that rule.
Oh, okay.
So, in wars afterward, there were not regularly held elections during wars?
Well, like, FDR was elected 4 times.
Oh, but so that's like, not the same thing. Yeah. But they didn't stop having elections. He was just reelected because he was so popular. I mean, because of the war, to be fair. But,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It didn't stop the election. Okay. Is that it, then?
I think so. Where do you guys rank it? Like you said, do you liked it more than season 3? Where?
Yeah, I'd say season 1, season 4, season 2, season 3. I think, like you said earlier, Stephen, the middling seasons just did not, kind of lost the energy of the show. And while this season certainly had a lot of flaws, I feel like it got some of that pacing and that energy back, especially with some of the stuff at the beginning and also with some of the stuff with the brokered convention. I really liked. So yeah, I got there pretty darn fast, faster than I think I did for the last couple. So yeah, it's pretty solid. I don't think it was season 1 caliber, but it was pretty good.
I probably agree with Zach. I might switch 2 and 3 or maybe tie them or something. Cause 3 had some really interesting things. I just felt like it barely moved forward. And unlike this season, like, you know, we talked about the gun law and, you know, Iko is not really being fully fleshed out, but like American Works and the Jordan Valley, like that stuff was paper thin. Yeah. And at least this stuff had some consideration. Like I felt the gun bill might actually have been like a little bit of a scathing commentary about America's relationship with like guns, like terrible crisis. Let's introduce a bill. Let's immediately defeat it and move on. So I like this season pretty well. I think season 1 will always stand as like, this is really good TV. Season 4, you know, maybe upon a rewatch, its flaws will become more apparent, especially since I binged this in like 4 days.
Did you guys all watch it like within the first weekend?
Yeah
I watched it yesterday.
Just took you the full week to get there.
Oh, no, like I watched just the whole series yesterday.
OMG. Okay.
Wow.
That's why I was like, if I can get through it, I'll show up. And that's why I was commenting all of yesterday.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty good. All right. Well, it has been a pleasure talking with you guys about this. I really enjoyed it. If there's another season, I guess, and hopefully the last one, we'll go back and see how it all shapes up. Should be fun. If nothing else, then to see what they decide. If it's not good, maybe still have plenty to talk about, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, thank you, everyone who has listened to this. It's been great. And, of course, follow us on all the things, Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, whatever else we happen to have at Vassals of Kingsgrave. Go to the WordPress, go to YouTube. You know what to do. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.